Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. We are at 1 o'clock again. We were at 2 o'clock, Frank, for 3 weeks. And, hey, we're at 1 o'clock now, until further notice. We imagine it'll be for the next several years, 1 o'clock. Kyle in the control room. Kyle is doing double duty today, as well as my guest, Joe Schmidt. Kyle.
Hi.
Welcome to Flashback Twin Cities today. Enthusiastic to be here. Tom is on special assignment. Up north somewhere, I think he's testing soil and water up in the Boundary Waters. But happy to have Joe Schmidt, and Joe Schmidt was on Stan's show last hour, and we've been tracking for about a year to get him on Flashback Twin Cities, and between Stan's show, the book autographing, and Flashback Twin Cities, all three came the same day. So welcome, Joe, to Flashback Twin Cities.
It works out great for me, and I'm all KLBB today. That's me.
Well, hey, we're all KLBB all the time. You're in the club, 1220. Great conversation you had to stand, listen to the whole thing. And, you know, what we do here in Flashback Twin Cities is really kind of go deep in the archives to, you know, learn what made Joe Joe. You're an author, you're a speaker, you're the sports director, Channel 5. But you came here from Green Bay, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
and you came here as a weekend anchor. You came here as the backup sports guy.
To Bob Bruce.
Yeah, fresh from Green Bay.
Yep.
Are you from Green Bay, correct?
A little town outside Green Bay called Seymour.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting because, you know, when I went to college, I went to the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, and my goal in life was to be the sports director of WBAY-TV in Green Bay. And by the age of 25 years old, I had accomplished my goal. And I had a "is that all there is" moment.
Mm-hmm.
I was engaged to a lady at the time, and we were having some issues. She took a job in Madison, and my contract was coming up, and I kind of had, well, I'll show her.
So was she in TV also?
She was in TV also. Okay. So I sent out two tapes. And I had two interviews, one in Indianapolis and one in Minneapolis. And the one in Minneapolis was first. And before I left, KSDP offered me the job. And Minneapolis was like, I just thought, this is almost perfect because I'm still close enough, you know, to be there with my family in Wisconsin when I need to. And I'm in a major market that has four professional sports teams, only three at the time, but eventually four, a major university, and, you know, KSDP covered things big time.
And no offense to Indianapolis, but those of us who have driven through it and spent time there, if you had to live somewhere between Indianapolis and Minneapolis, there's no comparison. And,
yeah.
And to all my Indianapolis podcast fans, I apologize for this, but
no. And so what happened was, you know, when Minneapolis offered the job, I didn't go to Indianapolis for the job interview. And I think because they knew I would be going there next, that's how come they made the offer at the time. And I came in. I was actually the 5 o'clock sports anchor and Bob Bruce's backup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about that way for almost a year before Bob Bruce started Twin Cities Live.
Twin Cities Live.
So then I was doing the 5 and the 6, and Bob came back into the 10. Well, I knew that wasn't going to last long. So eventually I was doing the 5, 6, and 10. So that's kind of how it happened.
And funny situation, because we here are the home of the Green Bay Packers here, KLB.
You guys are the home of the Green Bay Packers?
We are home of the Green Bay Packers. You know, if that stadium hadn't been built, we would have just made tons of money here because we would have been the go-to station for the state to listen to the Green Bay. But you're a lifelong Packer fan, I'm assuming, correct?
You know, it's interesting. That's the number one question I get when anybody finds out I was born and raised near Green Bay. And you know what? My dad ran the American Legion Club in Seymour, Wisconsin, and we had two or three buses going there to every Packer game as a kid growing up. And I remember back in those days, you would sit there and you would get an extra. If somebody had an extra ticket, I'd get to go to the game. And yeah, sure, I was a huge Packer fan. But when I came to Minnesota, you know, all of a sudden, first of all, in the media, your fandom changes a little bit because you're there to work,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking for a good story. But the second thing is, all of a sudden, you start liking the people you're working with
mm-hmm.
at the Vikings, for example. You know, for example, I knew the PR guy for 30 years. I've known Fred Zambrilletti, the trainer. I mean, so you start liking those guys, and you're much happier when your team wins.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easier locker room to work. You're much more relevant in the newscast. So I have no allegiance to the Green Bay Packers at all. And quite frankly, I like the Vikings to win just because it's not fun covering a 6-10 football team. It's much more fun covering a 14-2 football team. I've covered them both. And believe me, it is a lot more fun. Your job's easier. The athletes are easier to deal with. You get much more airtime. You're much more relevant. So I look at it very selfishly. I like the Vikings to win.
I do feel that.
Go to the Super Bowl, I go to the Super Bowl.
Well, hey, 2018, right?
There you go.
You'll be at the Super Bowl one way or another. I feel bad for you guys on Sunday nights when we've had a couple years where the Vikings haven't done so great. And Sunday night, it's much easier, I'm guessing, to go on there and say, yep, another great win by the Vikings today, and everything's great, and you're interviewing the coaches and the players, and everyone's happy, versus the walk-off in the locker room, scoffing, tirades, anger. Is he going to be fired this week? Are we replacing coaches? What's Ziggy going to do next?
Yeah, and it is tough because when I always say this, you can always tell all a team is doing on the field by the stories off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's stories about discontent or athletes acting up or what have you, you know the team is losing. You know the team is struggling. So, and I'm a positive guy. I'd much rather cover a winner than a loser. I mean, covering the Twins the last 3 years has not been fun. Just because... You know, when you go over there, it's every story is about who's doing poor and you know who's going to be fired next or what have you. So it's much easier to cover a winning team, and it's much more enjoyable. You know, it's part of the job covering a losing team. We just have had a lot of it.
Well, and our guest today, Joe Schmidt, when you first came here in 85, then 2 years later, the Twins won the World Series. And then, of course, 3 years later, you must assume this is what Minnesota's like. We win championships all the time.
Well, you got to remember, 1991 in particular, we had the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Final Four. The Minnesota North Stars made the Stanley Cup Finals. We had the Twins winning the World Series. The Vikings made a pretty good playoff run. I mean, it was 1 year where Gopher basketball was very relevant at the time, where it was the most amazing. We had the U.S. Open here. I mean, you think about it. And I look back and remember at the time I looked and tried to find a market, a major market in the United States that had that many major sporting events in that short a period of time on the calendar, and I could not find one.
And if you look at this, and you had gone back from you were sports guy, main sports guy, then you're back up again for a while, and
yep.
Then you came back as so 91. You're the main sports guy again.
Yep.
So you came at the right time to report on some great news events for sports.
Yeah. I took a demotion at one time in my career, which it was not your own fault, but that happens. And I survived. You know, and I survived, and then I was able to come back, and it was great because I was the main guy in 87, I was the main guy in 91, so that's where it counted the most.
Yeah,
and
I do love these, and no offense to anyone on the air right now, but these national searches for someone. We're going to do a national search to find the next best thing, and then about a year later, well, we're going to go back the way we had it before because actually it was better that way.
I was a victim of a consultant, let's just put it that way. At that time.
You mean the one that's in Des Moines, Iowa? That one? Okay, all right.
It's actually Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids.
Who's counting?
Well, they're here now.
Iowa.
They're here now, right? You know, we were talking a little bit about, you and Stan were talking about bloopers, and I want to play a little bit of audio here from one blooper in particular. I played this on air a couple times, but it's every time I play it, it's worth it.
Get away with that tribe. You'll be so-
I don't believe it.
This was just a prop.
The hand of sports real.
Yeah. Banana tree.
The studio. What?
Joe just got a pie in the face. He was going to.
I got in trouble for that one. So what had happened was we used to run a thing. Gary Schulzenberg produced it for years. It was called Sports Real.
Sports Real, right? Yep.
And anyway. Sports Reel, when you think about it, was almost before YouTube. I mean, it was before YouTube, but it became all the videos you see on YouTube. Gary Schulzenberg would scan the globe and find all these amazing little video clips, and we put them together in a reel every week. And anyway, one of the things we did was a pie-throwing contest. So we came out, and the whole idea was that I was going to pretend I was going to throw the pie in Ruth Spencer's face, and then one of the floor people came up and put it in my face. Well, we forgot to let anybody know that was going to happen. I got in a little trouble for that one.
So that was
a little too slapsticky for a news set, which I now understand. I was, you know, younger and a little immature, and I wouldn't try the old pie trick today.
That wasn't a staged event then?
Oh, of course it was staged.
Oh, okay.
It's TV. We staged it.
Well, you know, I've played that clip before, and again, it's on tcmedianow.com under blooper reel. If you want to see some of those bloopers that Joe and Stan are talking about, we got a few edited ones over on TC Media Now because it's tough to do on radio because they're so visual, but but they are fun. And there's some coarse language. Some things I have edited out because apparently you guys are human after the cameras are off sometimes, or you think the cameras
are off.
Well,
we were having some fun. And once again, I look back and I saw some of these clips and said, you know, I'm not real proud of that one. But, you know, it is what it is. And you live by the mouth, die by the mouth. But, you know, most of these were not expected to be seen on TV. You know, you're working with your people and you're having fun. And sometimes you're being sarcastic, and it might not come across that way.
Let's talk about a little bit about that first day. You're talking about Stan, your first day at Channel 5 in January of 85. You're doing the 10 o'clock sports in Minneapolis, the place you wanted to, be. This is the prime time. You're at Channel 5, which at the time, and they still are, this was, you know, number one, number two news team in the city.
And it was always considered one of the best news markets in the nation.
Correct.
By far. And quite frankly, it was considered that because of Stanley Hubbard. You know, and Stanley Hubbard was, you know, and his father were pioneers in the broadcasting business. You got to remember, we were the first satellite truck. We were the first live broadcast of a sporting event. You know, KSDP has so many firsts in their history. And then, of course, now on to the satellite, you know, the satellite dishes that people have in their homes. You know, that's all came out of Hubbard Broadcasting. So we were right on the cusp of this innovation all the time. It was amazing.
Well, and people that are a little bit younger don't understand that, you know, Stanley Hubbard and his father were not in the Broadcast Hall of Fame because they had a TV station. They're in the Broadcast Hall of Fame because they bought the first color camera. They bought the first, actually, RCA TV camera. And they took risks. They took risks by investing in USB and DSS. And if I recall correctly, I believe they were supposed to launch their satellite at the same time the Challenger went down. And they believed that was, and they couldn't get insurance to put the satellite in the.
Exactly right.
And what a daring thing to see, you know, see an investment, and this didn't happen luckily, but to see your investment just explode. Not only, I mean, you know, the lives aside, which was tragic, but to see the, you know, billions of dollars that would have gone in smoke.
And if I could tell a story about
please.
That, you know, Stanley Hubbard put, you know, probably put his company and his family at huge financial risk putting the satellite up in space. And I remember being there for the live event. And for several years, because he had a hard time getting investors, because investors need vision. And Stanley Hubbard had this vision. He saw things before anybody else did. So for several years, things were pretty lean at the station. You know, there wasn't a 401k matching for a while. There wasn't a lot of capital investment. There wasn't a lot of, you know, big-time raises. And once that satellite went up and once they started having success, the Hubbards gave everybody who had been there through that long haul some very nice checks that they didn't have to do. And I remember seeing grown men cry when they opened those checks. And it was very, very nice. And it was thank you for your loyalty and for sticking with us. And it was a very cool gesture. I blew mine on wine, women, and
lottery tickets,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
And lottery tickets.
The media, and I use the term, I'm not trying to use the term derogatory to sweeping generalization, but the media, they can portray people in power, whether they own the Twin, whether it be Carl Pollard or Stanley Hubbard, they portray it in the way they want to portray it. And Stanley Hubbard, I think, has gotten some unfair coverage just based on what happens on air. And you've been around a long time, Dave Dahl's been around a long time, but I've been fortunate through this and through other organizations to meet a lot of long-term Hubbard employees that have been around for 40, 50 years.
Oh, sure.
And Brad Jacobs was a photographer for 55 years.
Yeah, and he's still working. I saw him last night at Jason Davis's going away party. He's still doing some stuff for Mr. Hubbard. You know, here's the interesting thing. You know, there's a big thing about buying local, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody likes to buy local because the big box stores come in and they knock out the local grocer, the local bookstore, whatever the case might be. And Stanley Hubbard and the Hubbard family have been local broadcasters for years and years and years. When they've been up against Gannett at Channel 11, CBS at Channel 4, Fox at Channel 9, so they're up against these huge conglomerates. And because of that, when there's an anchor change or when there's something public, there's somebody you can point to, and you point to the rich guy, Stanley Hubbard. Where if Channel 4 or Channel 9, you know, Channel 9 just fired one of their anchors, nobody knew anything about it, you know, and who do they blame? Because there wasn't a Stanley Hubbard to blame, it's Fox, and nobody says anything. So,
well, no,
so they've
no,
been the target because of that.
No one would know who to call.
On
a video here on TCMD Now, Pat Miles does a great interview with Stanley Hubbard, and he says, I answer my phone. When people call me, I answer it, and then I say things which people think that is not the right thing to say.
Well, you know, he's not afraid to open his mouth, and he's opinionated on a lot of things. And you know what? He has every right to be.
Do you find that? Do you find the way also in covering sports? We're working with billionaire owners, and Carl Pola, the Pola family, Ziggy Wilf, Glenn Taylor. These are guys with a lot of money. And whenever something goes wrong, when the team starts losing, it's straight to the ownership. It's straight. Where do you think? Do you think it's fair coverage, or what's your take on that?
You know, I mean, I think it goes with the territory.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, it's very interesting. There are a lot of millionaires and close to billionaires in Minnesota that nobody knows anything about.
Mm-hmm.
You buy a professional sports franchise, everybody's going to know about
mm-hmm.
you. And so you know that goes with the territory. You know that you're going to be, you know, Glenn Taylor is going to be judged on how the Timberwolves do, not the other businesses he does, not the philanthropy that he does.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be judged because the Timberwolves haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. He's a lousy owner, you know, which some people then equate to he's a lousy person, which, of course, is wrong. So when you buy a professional sports team, you're moving to the big time. You have to go. It goes with the territory. You know, the guy who's done a pretty good job of it, quite frankly, is Craig Leopold, the owner of the Minnesota Wild. You know, he's, by choice, has stayed a background guy.
Hear his name.
Does not do many interviews. Does not. And because of that, because of his kind of anonymity, he's kind of become a guy that nobody knows. He literally could walk down Stillwater on a busy Saturday afternoon and nobody would know who the heck he is.
I think you ask most people, they would not know who that is. And you know also a reason why, though, I think, though? He got a new stadium from the up front, though, so he's not been at the legislature asking for a stadium for the last few years. But no, you're absolutely right. He's taken a back seat. He's done what owners probably should do sometimes is step back. He hasn't. No voicemails have gone out in public or anything. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. I got to get off that topic. You find it. I never knew who that, you know, Donald Sterling was until that came out. I don't think most people ever would know or care.
Well, you know, it is interesting that you know, I think the NBA turned a blind eye to him for a while
mm-hmm.
because he is a billionaire, because he was an owner. There were some things in his background that certainly were questionable.
Hey, but he was getting awards for the things that he allegedly was not in favor of.
But I also see Mark Cuban's point, you know, mm-hmm. where you say, you know, just because I own the team, I know I have to be held to different standards, but they can't take my team away because I say something stupid.
I think that it. I agree. It comes to a slippery slope that you were talking about before.
It does.
That if you're if everything you did in your early days was on YouTube, you know, for the first day on with Stan in January of '85 to last week, if everything was on YouTube, if everything's recorded. What's left? We're not going to have any perfect people left, because if we hold our politicians, people in business, people in the public to this idealistic perfectionism, there's not going to be anyone left.
You know what? I am really, truly waiting for the first candidate to go down because of Facebook. And you know what'll happen, because Facebook is forever. You know, you think back to, you know, Bill Clinton, you know, saying he didn't inhale and all this kind
mm-hmm.
of stuff,
oh.
you know. If somebody had a picture of that, and somebody will have a picture of somebody doing a beer bong or somebody standing on their head doing a, you know, kegger or something, and they're going to use it in an ad. And, you know, I warn my kids about it all the time. You put stuff up there, and, you know, and quite frankly, even on like a your site, you know, there's some things out there that I would prefer not to be out there, but, you know, I did them, somebody... You know, I did them before there was the internet age, but now it is the internet age, and because of what I do, stuff gets taped. So, but anyway.
Well, I think it's a simple point, though. Like in young Kyle's generation here, where the candidate is going to have so everything that their lives documented on the internet through Twitter, through Facebook, and you can try to scrub all you want off the internet. There's going to be archive of what you've said and done if it's out there. We talk about in this country privacy. The Patriot Act or whatever else we're afraid of, but we give our privacy away. We post our vacation photos. We post where we're at. We post what we're doing. Don't worry if Apple's tracking our phones where we are. We're giving away the information for the public.
Oh yeah, yeah. It is very interesting, this whole Edward Snowden thing. And I sit mm-hmm. there and you'll just. I mean, we all have friends who, you know, say, oh, you know, by the way, my house is going to be open for the next week because my husband and I are in Jamaica. And we're going to be drinking real heavily, and we're probably going to, you know, it's yeah, amazing right, what people right. put on there.
Let's take a quick break. I know I got to go across the street, but I want to do a quick thing on talk about what you've been up to lately in the book. So let's take a break, Kyle. We'll come back on Flashback Twin Cities with Joe Schmidt. Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Austin here with my guest, Joe Schmidt. Joe, remind us of the book, name of the book.
The book is named Silent Impact, Stories of Influence Through Purpose, Persistence, and Passion. And it came out in February, and I'll be over at the Valley Bookseller from 2 to 4 here today in Stillwater. Looking forward to meeting some people, and the book's gone very well. It's been a very fun process. You know, I wrote the book to go along with the speaking I do, because I speak on the topic of influence, and I find that some of the most influential people in the world aren't trying to be influential.
And if we have someone who wants to have you come speak at their organization or at their business, they can go to joeschmidt.com.
Yep, I got my website, joeschmidt.com, so you can see what I do there, and you can buy a book there if you want, or you can go down to, you know, the Valley Bookseller, too.
It looks like a little bit about a couple of career pivots. You decided you wanted to try news for a while. You wanted to be a news anchor for a while.
Well, I'll tell you how that happened. I really didn't decide to want to try news.
Okay.
They asked me.
Okay.
And I got to be honest with you, and part of the reason I did it was I was kind of sick and tired of having people come in from outside the Twin Cities saying they love Minnesota, and then 2 years later they're leaving.
Yeah.
And they couldn't care about the Twin Cities. They cared about a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
I cared about Minnesota, and I cared. I knew this community, and when they asked me to do it, I had to think long and hard about it. I knew I wasn't going to be the best newscaster in the world. I knew that sports was my niche, but I thought I would give it a try, you know, both personally and professionally. I think it made sense at the time. I've been traveling a lot in sports. You know, we had bigger budgets back then in newscasting. You know, when the Gophers would make a playoff run, the Timberwolves make a playoff run, I had 2 years in a row when it was the Timberwolves and Wild and Gophers, I worked 44 to 45 days and half of those days on the road. And I just, my family was young, and all of a sudden the news opportunity came along, and I thought, boy, if I ever do it, I'll do it now. And I did it, and I, you know, I had some success at it. I think it was going okay. And then another opportunity came along, and I left the business for a couple of years and then came back. And when I came back, I knew I wasn't coming back in news. I was coming back in sports.
And I'm going to ask a question. Did they come to say to you, look, we need you to come back here and do sports. We've kind of directionless. We need you to come back and do this.
And basically...
They'd gone through about three sports anchors, you know, after you left.
Yeah. And they did. And what happened is they were going to hire another sportscaster, and they called me up, and I had just kind of started my own business. I had Sun Country as a client. I had a couple of other businesses that...
You were Vacation Joe.
I was working with a couple of other businesses, so I was starting a my own consulting firm, and I was doing speaking and writing, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to do my own thing. Well, and all of a sudden Channel 5 calls, and I said, hey, another client. I'm going to not only help them hire a sportscaster, mm-hmm. I'll train the guy. And that's where the conversation started, and then they said, no, we really want you to come back. And I said, well, make it right. And we made it right. And one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to restructure the sports department back to the standards that I really believe that we worked awfully hard to get. And there was a lot of history there with some very talented people I worked with. And I was able to do that. So I'm very proud of the product that we put on the air every night. I know we work very hard. I've got some young guys. I've got a really nice mix of guys. You know, Darren Wolfson, who just is a bulldog, and he's out there digging all the time. Chris Long, who is an excellent backup anchor and a guy who can tell a great story. We got photographers. I mean, the whole staff right now is rock solid. James Monocle's our executive producer. So it's very fun.
So you have the rare opportunity to actually, in the media business, usually we're reaching out to them. Okay, here's our tapes. Here's my audition. They came to you. You actually had the rare chance to say in 2010 or so?
2010, yeah.
To say, okay, I'll come back if...
Yeah.
This and this.
And it wasn't all about money. It was really about I wanted the quality and the time to be there. So so that was good. And you know, when you have leverage, you should use leverage. And I had a little
Why
leverage
not?
There. And I was able to get some young people in that I knew were going to be great people. You know, Darren had been an intern of mine when he was in high school, so I knew what he was all about. And Chris Long was just getting hired on, and I knew Chris from Fort Myers, so... And he worked in Duluth beforehand. So I knew I was getting a good team that I was going to be able to put together. And that was very, very important to me, because life is too short. If you can't work with people you're going to have fun with,
right.
People you're going to work hard with. And
if you're working in sports, you've got to be having fun. Or what's the point of doing this,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I also wanted to make sure that we could tell the stories the way we wanted to tell them. And, you know, it's nothing is ever perfect. You know, a sports rap is not around anymore. That hurts a little bit, you know, because when we went to that hour newscast, On Sunday nights now, I just get more time. I get special time to do a, like this week, I'm going to do a special piece on Chad Greenway. I went down this week and interviewed one of the longtime vets about what is all changing down there, where before I'd have him in the studio and so forth. So I miss that, to be honest with you. I wish Sports Rep was back, but it's a different time of day in the media where, you know what, you just have to kind of do what everybody says you're doing.
Well, the best part about Sports Rep is people can see athletes and coaches in a more casual setting than just that press conference. And that's what's great about Sports Rep, especially Sports Rep. It was so casual. And I don't mean to take that away from what the content of it was. But it was in Rosen Sports Sunday, they did that pretty well, too. But
yeah. And it was designed to be that. And it was also designed for an opportunity to have longer form stories. You know, I get 3 minutes at 10 o'clock at night. Now, all of a sudden, I was getting, 22 minutes because, with the commercial breaks and so forth. That's very nice. There was also a time that we could, show off our reporters and show off our staff, and they could do stories. So I miss that. That would be one thing. If I could change, that would be one thing I'd change.
When you left Channel 5, there was, we were in the Dome. We were in the, actually, all three teams in the Dome. Now we have a stadium for every single team we're covering now. So those press boxes got you a little nicer than what you left.
Yeah, they are. I hated the Dome. I gotta be honest with you. It was so funny when the Dome was getting blown up and all this stuff. I heard all these reporters, and all these radio people talk about, I'm going to miss this. The place was a dump. The only thing good about it is it was easy to get in and out of there.
Well, yeah, in out the door. But there's a sports guy, not Bob, another sports guy, Channel 5, who is no longer there. He left at the same time you joined. And he said, I would not have come to Minnesota had there not been a Dome, because I'm not going to cover football in 20 below weather. I thought, well, you're the only one that's defending the Dome because he came from a southern climate.
Yeah, yeah. How long did he last?
Well, that's how that... But that's how that goes. A couple of cool questions. Number one, when's your garage sale? Because now Bud Grant and Sid have their garage sale. When's yours?
I won't have a garage sale. I wish my wife had a garage sale. You got so much junk in the house, but I won't have a garage sale, believe me.
Sid's garage sale, this has been a topic of this show and Stan's show for a few weeks now. The picture, you're expecting some big sports, some sports autographs. It's like old shoes in a bathrobe.
Yeah, I know.
Bud's was a little bit better, I think.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing was, I think Sid started off where he was going to take all the money himself, and then he got shamed into giving it to a charity. Bud never got shamed at all. He just took all the money himself.
Well, remember, there was a, it's a little bit out of the way for me to go to, and plus, I think that it was actually in his garage. It wasn't at an estate auction place. It was at Bud's
garage. It was
garage.
At his house, yeah.
Yeah, and the picture of Bud is signing autographs, and he's telling the crowd, "Yeah, if you buy something, I sign it for free. If you don't, it's $25." There you go. That's opportunity when you see it right there.
Well, he's a capitalist. What are you going to say? And on top of that, Bud made very good money, but Bud didn't make the big bucks they're making today.
Now
you got coaches making $5-6 million a year. Bud didn't make. Bud never made $1 million a year, I don't think, coaching the Vikings.
No, but we were just talking about old movie stars in the 30s, okay? Called athletes, old movie stars, that at the end of their career and their lives are $1,000 to their name. Well, they weren't making that kind of dollars. You take even like, the Fran Tarkenton, they didn't make their money out of football. They made it from their businesses afterward. And if you don't do anything afterward, look at the athletes who used to be selling cars on weekends in the off season. They used to have jobs. Professional sports wasn't a full-time job till 30 years ago.
It's funny. I remembered when I said, I know the business has changed. When I'm not going to say who the player is because he still lives in town, but I was in the Vikings locker room. This was back in probably the early 90s to mid-90s. And anyway, that was back when we were trying to get guests on Sports Wrap, and we're giving them a $250 gift certificate at the Men's Warehouse, place they wouldn't even shop. But we're just trying to get guys there, so you had to give them something, because that's what everybody was doing. And I saw a player turn down a one-hour autograph session at a car dealership that was on his way home for $5,000. And I thought, when $5,000 to an athlete, when an hour's worth of his time for signing autographs isn't worth it to him, I said, the business has changed.
And that's what you're getting paid to do at Stillwater Valley Bookstore, right? Well, $5,000?
I took it for $4,900.
Thank you. Okay, good. One question that I know you got to get going, but social media, we're talking about that before the break. Now that the job has changed, you came into a world of videotape, typewriters. And
oh, yeah.
This is not that long ago either. Kyle might think it's a long time ago. This is not that long ago. I used to do reports on typewriter, too. Everything's computerized, paperless. We couldn't even find a scrap of paper a little while ago. What do you find this is an easier connection to the viewers, to the audience, or do you find this more of a distraction to what you're trying to do during the day?
It depends on who the audience is. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, let's face it, the business that I've been in has been changing since day one, and it's always changing. Anytime you're dealing with technology, it's had a very big change because of social media. Mm-hmm. And not only how we produce it. I think the biggest change is this. In the old days, if we knew that Danny Green was going to get fired, we'd try to hold the story until 10 o'clock at night because we wanted to lead the newscast to make a big splash. If you found out Danny Green was going to get fired now, you'd tweet it out, be the first one to tweet it out. And before long, everybody's taking credit for the big scoop. So that is one of the biggest changes, just because it's so immediate, and then everybody responds to it. There's a lot of noise out there. So I think that sometimes social media is in some ways overrated, but at the same time, it can be very powerful. So I know I'm on both sides of the fence on this one, but you have to be very selective and you have to be very careful on what you tweet out there, because I almost sometimes, when I'm being sarcastic, put down that I'm being sarcastic, because people will take you in a tweet. And to me, Twitter is a little bit all about sarcasm, that you have to be careful. You just have to be careful.
Well, look at how many careers, even the last few years, of high-profile people have been, if not ruined, jeopardized greatly by a tweet.
Yeah.
And is it worth your job sometimes to make that opinion? And one thing about social media I find fascinating, especially with politics, is there something that I have to say that's so meaningful and that's not been said yet that I can say that's going to actually invoke some kind of intellectual dialogue? No, it's not. It's just me blasting out some thought that I formulated from my matchbook idea of the world, and people get really angry on that. And I know that talking to people of competitor stations of yours who get 1,000 emails every Sunday when they make some statement on the Vikings.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you've had similar experiences.
Oh, sure. All the time. Especially now that people can either be anonymous or faceless. You know, they'll hammer you pretty good. And you know what? You have to take some of them serious. And I usually take it serious based on how many misspellings they have. If they don't know how to spell correct, then I just don't take it.
Or if they use the letter B and letter R. I love on sports radio on Sundays when after I don't love a loss, but they lose. And then the calls that come in that everyone knows what should have happened that day. They know how to call the plays. They know how to pick talent.
Well, one of the most fun things that I can remember doing is you know, for years traveling with the Vikings, and on the way to the airport after a game and the call-in show, we would always find the call-in show, and you can name the city, you can name the team, and I can tell you about the calls. When the team loses, the coach made the wrong call, why don't they run more screen passes, they've got to get rid of this quarterback. I mean, it is in every city. The wine line is exactly the same after a loss.
Steve Cannon got a great line. If callers were that great, they'd have their own show.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
Took no callers. The website is joeschmidt.com. The book is Silent Impact, Stories of Influence Through Purpose, Perspective, and Passion. Joe, it's been great having you. Anything else for the KLBB audience here? I know that you haven't been to Stillwater in a while, but
I haven't been here for a while, which I'm coming back again, and I'll be happy to come back on your show in some time, and come on by the station, I'll give you some tapes.
We like tapes at tcmedianow.com. Again, you can see Joe's past work, even some work that Joe might cringe at, but you can see it at tcmedianow.com. Joe's tagged in his videos, and you can see him on the Lou Holtz show. You can see him doing some sportscasts from 1987, and even some sports real. So, Joe, we'll have you on again.
All right, that sounds good. Thanks, Tom.
Kyle, take a break. We'll come back with a few more things here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
This is where your music and memories live. Club 1220.
KLBB. Not sure what happened there.
Are we in the air?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we're playing radio there. Welcome back to Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here for the next segment here with Kyle and not Tom. It's okay. Tom is on special assignment, testing out soil and water in the boundary waters. Joe Schmidt, thank you for being on the show. He was actually doing double duties, so we had to let Joe go back and sign books over at Valley Bookstores. He'll be there from 2 to 4 today if you want to see Joe and get his book signed. I wanted to, we have a rare chance today to kind of just go through some things that have been bugging me, you know, some things that some lists that I've had in my little pile here of things to talk about. And do you watch a lot of TV, Kyle?
More than I probably should.
Well, we can admit our vices here. If you watch TV a lot, you probably don't watch the same shows I watch, which makes you probably more normal mainstream than me, but there's a great list that was out. This is from BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed has some really good stuff. This is 12 awful 90s movies based on TV shows. These are TV shows that were popular in the 60s or 70s, and the geniuses in Hollywood decided to make a movie out of them. So I want to kind of go with this list here, and there's a seems to be a period, late 90s, that let's take big names, put them in bad movies off of TV shows. And that's why I cringe when I see a good classic TV show be made into a movie. The first one here is The Avengers. You ever heard of The Avengers?
I think I have. I'm not sure, though.
Based on the British television series of the same name, which ran from 1961 to 1969, not even the all-star cast featuring Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, and Sean Connery could save this dud. The film was nominated for 10 Razzie Awards, including Worst Picture, Worst Supporting Actor, Worst Actress, Worst Actor, Worst Screen Couple. The most scathing review from the New York Times was, to put it mildly, the dandified fiends does not look capable of inflicting serious damage with that bumper shot, and Ms. Thurman had a better costume party role as Poison Ivy in Batman Forever. That's a shot right there.
Yeah.
Jane Maslin of the New York Times. Second one, Mr. Magoo cartoon, which...
I have seen that movie.
You've seen the movie?
Yes.
Okay, well, then you're the only one, because based on the 60s cartoon of the same name, Disney adapted a barely-known cartoon character, Mr. Magoo, played in the film by Leslie Nielsen, into a barely-seen movie. The most scathing review is from Jonathan Rosenbaum of the Chicago Reader. If you really hate kids, pack them off this slapdash farce. Okay. Moving on, The Mod Squad. Great show. It's probably on late at night on MeTV, but it's also a movie that was created in 1999. Based on the popular ABC series of the same name, which aired from 1968 to 1973. Despite the hot young cast, the film tanked the box office. It grossed $13 million during its theatrical run and had a $50 million budget. The most scathing review, at the end, theater exit signs are welcome beacons, by Lawrence Van Gelder of the New York Times.
That's not even, like, that bad of a scathing review.
Well, I guess not a lot of people like The Mod Squad. Did you see this? Have any of these seen besides Mr. Magoo?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. I have not seen any of these movies yet. The next one, I've also not seen this. Inspector Gadget, also made in 1999.
That one I have seen.
Well, I've seen the cartoon. It actually wasn't my favorite cartoon, but based on the popular syndicated cartoon of the same name, the film, which starred Matthew Broderick as Inspector Gadget, was actually a moderate success at the box office, and even spawned a direct-to-video sequel, which featured Third Rock from the Sun's French Stewart as a title character. Well, not so scathing review. This is the worst live-action Disney feature since 1997's That Darn Cat remake, Steve Rosen of the Denver Post. Moving on. Lost in Space, 1998. Have you ever seen the old Lost in Space?
I've seen parts of the old one. I have seen the newest one.
It's uncomfortably bad to watch the old Lost in Space. It really is. Based on the campy CBS series that ran from 1965 to 1968, the film was a moderate success at the box office, and it also had the distinction of ending Titanic's 15-week-long reign atop the box office. Roger Ebert wrote, "This was the kind of movie that if it fell into a black hole, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference." Roger didn't like it.
Ouch.
This next one I didn't see. Everyone did see it. I didn't see this one because it just disturbs me. The costumes disturbed me. The Flintstones from 1994. I'm sure you've
heard. Which one?
The first one with John Goodman.
Okay.
Everyone saw it. I can't have John Goodman and Rick Moranis play Fred and Barney. Based on the classic ABC animated series, which ran from 1966, the film was a huge box office hit, earning $130 million during its domestic theatrical run. Sadly, the movie was also Elizabeth Taylor's last final theatrical film and garnered her a Razzie Award for Worst Supporting Actress. Liz Taylor played Wilma Flintstone's mother in this movie. Most scathing review, The Flintstones is a $45 million design problem with 98 minutes of weak prehistoric jokes. The stone shtick gets mighty old after about 15 minutes. Yeah, you know, seeing John Goodman in the Flintstones costume didn't do it for me. I think just the poster itself kept me away. And, yeah, I didn't see that one. This next one I did see, and I'm embarrassed to say I did see it. I'm the only one that saw this one. It's Pat from 1994.
I've never even heard of that one.
Based on the androgynous Saturday Night Live character Pat, the film was both a box office and critical bomb. It currently holds a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's the film review site. Most scathing review, ever heard the one about the pick that was too bad to be released, so it escaped? Well, the old joke now has a new punchline. It's Pat. Pat was the person who you couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, and that was the whole joke.
Okay, yeah.
And they made a movie, and the movie was so bad, they didn't release it theatrically. They put it out on direct-to-video, and I thought the skit on SNL was funny, So I rented it, and then I regretted my decision after I rented it. But it wasn't funny. You sometimes watch something one time that everyone tells you is so funny, and you kind of think to yourself, well, there was a funny part, and that was Pat.
Yeah, you just kind of keep watching it, just waiting for the funny, and then it just never comes.
Didn't happen. Next one, My Favorite Martian from 1999. Ever see the old My Favorite Martian? Probably not.
Well, I've seen parts of it once again, and I have seen the newer one. The whole thing.
The quirky CBS sitcom of the same name that ran from 1963 to 1966. The movie tanked at the box office, earning just $36 million during its theatrical run out of a $65 million budget. Clearly, Disney underestimated the appeal of a forgotten 1960s sitcom. I think that the old one had the guy who played Incredible Hulk. I can't remember his name now. He was...
Wow.
Not Lou Ferrigno is the guy that... We're not thinking this here, Kyle. Google that. Most scathing review, glorified special effects demo reel based on singularly daft 60s sitcom. Next one, McHale's Navy. I remember this came out. I remember I stayed far away from it. Based on the ABC sitcom starring Ernest Borgnine, which ran from 1962 to 1966, the movie starred Tom Arnold. Most scathing review, even for a generation with only secondhand knowledge of the show, the new outing is ham-fisted, fitfully amusing lark that quickly runs aground. Number 10, The Beverly Hillbillies, the movie, starring Jim Varney. Based on the very popular CBS sitcom that was a film-length presentation, which ran from 1962 to 1971, while the film might have been a campy mess, it was actually a moderate box office success, earning $44 million domestically during its theatrical run. Well, a scathing review came from Roger Ebert. Imagine the dumbest half-hour sitcom you've ever seen spin out to 93 minutes by making it even more thin and shallow, and you have this movie. Yeah, there's a picture of Jim Varney. He was Ernest, and Dabney Coleman played Mr. Drysdale. This is the Beverly Hillbillies from the director of Wayne's World. Number 11, Dudley Do-Right. You got the name, don't you?
I do. Bill Bixby?
The fact that I couldn't remember that is shameful. Bill Bixby, yes. Bill Bixby was in My Favorite Martian. Dudley Do-Right with Brendan Fraser. From the creator George in the Jungle comes a new kind of hero. Based on the Dudley Do-Right of the Mounties shorts ran as part of the 1960s animated series Rocky and Bullwinkle, the film bombed the box office, grossing only $9.9 million against a budget of $70 million. That's gotta hurt. Apparently nobody at Universal remembered this film when they decided to green-light the adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. Most scathing review, dumber than Dudley, dumber than most cartoons, this film will be forgotten well before it's gone. I think it was, from Kenneth Turin of the Los Angeles Times. Number 12. This is one I did see. Not proud of it, but I did see it in the theater. Number 12, Wild Wild West.
Oh.
I know. The song's in your head now, isn't it?
That one was a bad
one. If you didn't see it, the show was a great, 60s Western that was on, and locally here, Channel 9 on afternoons for a long time in reruns. But this the movie starred Will Smith and Kevin Kline and was going to be the big thing, and it was heavily promoted, and the song was a hit, I guess. Wild Wild West song, not my kind of music, not the music we listen to on KLDB, but based on the Wild Wild West, a spy series set in the Old West that ran from 1965 to 1969 on CBS, a Will Smith summer blockbuster vehicle that somehow also managed to snag both Kevin Kline and Kenneth Branagh in leading roles. Although the movie grossed $113 million domestically, it was a box office failure due to its bloated $170 million budget. The film did eventually manage to turn around a small profit once it was released overseas. This is from the New York Times. This is another big, lavish movie with no there. Ruled by increasingly ghoulish special effects, it leaves reality so far behind that its storytelling would be arbitrarily even by comic book standards, and its characters share no common ground or emotional connection. It cares far more about herding audiences into theaters than about what they hear or see, from Janet Maslin of the New York Times. They actually offer up the theme song, which, because I do appreciate our listeners here, I will not play any part of that. You know the song.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember that movie was pounded on. It was Burger King promotions. It was billboards. It was, and we went and saw it. You know, all of us went and saw it. I was a young guy, and afterward, like, okay, well, that happened. I want to, and this is before the social media thing took over. Wild Wild West was a big thing. It was the same year that Blair Witch Project came out. This was supposed to be the scariest movie of all time. It was one of the first movies that did a great job of using the internet to frighten people into seeing it. They said that, you know, theaters across the country are closing down the Blair Witch Project because audiences are walking out too scared. Great marketing. So we went and saw it the same summer as Wild Wild West, and you watched like, okay, all right. Well, I had my hopes up to having the scariest experience of my life, and it's not happening. So I want to talk a little about social media now. We talked with Joe Schmidt, and it's something I think that very, I don't think we know these facts. This is from a internet source, jeffbullis.com. 72% of all internet users are now active on social media. So 72% of people that use the internet. Are you a Twitter?
I have a Twitter account. I am not active on it, though.
You do have one.
Yes, I do.
And you have a Facebook account, too, correct?
Once again, not active, but yeah, I do have one.
Well, you've activated it. That's active.
Yeah.
18 to 29-year-olds have an 89% usage, which I believe. The 30 to 49 bracket sits at 72%. So age 30 to 49, which I'm in there somewhere, 72% use social media. 60% of 50 to 60-year-olds are active on social media. In the 65-plus bracket, 43% are using social media.
That's still quite a bit.
Well, I believe that when Maya Angelou passed away this past week, she'd been tweeting up until the end, and she was in her 80s. That's quite remarkable. I do question sometimes if these celebrities are tweeting themselves, but...
oh, yeah.
I think that our friend over at the Good Neighbor, Sid Hartman, has a Twitter account, too. Now, if he's actually tweeting his own tweets, I don't know that or even believe that, but he does have one. Time spent on Facebook per hour spent online by country. USA citizens get the top at Cop Gong at 16%, Australians at 14%, and the Brits at 13. I'm sorry, these are minutes. 13 minutes. That's how many minutes per hour spent on Facebook.
What?
71% of users access social media from a mobile device. I also believe that.
Okay, that I believe, yeah.
Here's some Facebook facts for you. There are now 1.15 billion Facebook users. 1 million web pages are accessed using the login with Facebook feature. 23% of Facebook users log in at least 5 times a day. 47% of Americans say that Facebook is their number one influencer of purchases. 47%. I'm questioning the sample size of this, but 70% of marketers use Facebook to gain new customers. And now Twitter. Twitter has to be taken seriously. Last year, it took off its short pants and became a public company. So what is happening in the Twitter sphere? There are now over 550 million registered users. 34% of marketers use Twitter to successfully generate leads. Twitter was the fastest-growing network with a 44% growth from 2012 to 2013. 215 million active monthly users. Twitter's also made some changes in the last few months that has made it more visual and engaging. Businesses should no longer be ignoring the 140-character pipsqueak. I'm not a big Twitterer. We have a TC Media Now Twitter account. I occasionally will blast a couple things out there, but for me, it's a little bit slower, and I'm not interested in what everyone's doing all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's the same joke that Facebook had where everyone was always updating their yada yada is doing this. It's just that constantly, all the time now.
A good friend was in New York recently, and he was telling me that he went with his sisters to New York, and they were touring these places they'd never been to before. They'd never been to the Empire State Building, never been to Manhattan. They were taking pictures and then posting on Facebook right away, and they were waiting to see the comments and likes people got before they'd move on. And he said, can we enjoy the experience now, and then we can go to the computer? And I'm guilty, too, occasionally. Well, I'll find something I really like. I want people to... share the experience I'm having, but you kind of get lost into who am I trying to impress here? Am I trying to impress myself? Am I having a good time here? Or am I trying to impress my 400 followers or my 300 friends? Or and of course, you know, 90% of them I haven't seen in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, Stan and Joe were talking about, you know, meeting up with people they haven't seen in a long time. And the Facebook phenomenon is interesting to me because I see people now that I haven't seen in a while, and I think to myself, I know what you're doing. I see your pictures of your kids all the time.
Yeah. It's like you know a person without actually knowing them.
Right, right. And that's it's very interesting. Apparently, 72% of us are meeting our friends this way now. I think that 5 years from now, we'll just be texting from our own rooms and we'll never have to be social again. Hopefully not. this is Flashback Twin Cities. Kyle, thanks for sitting in tonight for 2 hours. And we'll be back next week at 1 o'clock live here at KLBB Club 1220. Till then, have a good week.